Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the NCSG Open Policy Call on 9th of December 2014. On the call today, we have Rafiq Damak, Joy Lidicote, Bill Drake, David Cake, Matthew Shears, Robin Gross, Avery Doria, Rudy Vantnik, and Ed Morris. From staff, we have myself, Mariam Bakoshi. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you so much. Over to you, Rafiq.
Thank you, Mariam. So thanks for everybody who is joining this call. So basically, we'll try this time to cover some parts of the GENASO council meeting agenda on Thursday, and then we have more policy issues that we can discuss, and maybe any other business. Checking the GENASO agenda, it sounds that there is no motion. It's mostly updates and discussion items, so we can sometimes merge with what we have in item number 3. Otherwise, is there any suggestion for item to be added to the agenda or topic that you would like to discuss? Okay. So
Bill, can we talk about the meeting?
Sorry, Bill? Which meeting?
The meeting in Washington, D.C.
Yes, it's in any other
D.C.
Yes, it's already in any other business, so, yeah. But it sounds that we don't have the latest version. Okay, yeah, it's already there. So let's go to the item number 2. Madam, can you please upload the GENASO agenda? So, I don't think we will try this time to cover all topics, just the main parts or those who we have more interest in to discuss. So, okay, let's make it much more. Okay. The first item that the GENASO we discussed, it's about the board working group report and nominating committee. We still have time to for NCSG to send a comment using the reply period, and this till the 9th of January. I'm trying to get former NOMCOM representative to participate in the drafting comment, but it's not that moving so much. So I guess I will try to make a push here. But I would like to hear more from GENASO counselor about what kind of discussion they had or they are going to have about this item, and if there is any action that the council may do here. Yes, Oliver, please go ahead.
Hi, I was waiting for Avi to raise her hand, but I guess she didn't. Well, the GENASO Council had picked up on this previously before the new councillors came on, and John Brard had offered to draft a comment on behalf of the GENASO Council to send into the public comment period, which I think the reply period ends on January 9th, if I'm not mistaken. He did circulate a draft of this and basically condemning the board working group report for several reasons. I could circulate that draft on the NCSG list later. I see Avery's raised her hand. She spoke up against the draft and made a certain number of remarks in support of some of the findings of the Board Working Group report, and she, as she mentioned in the chat here, that she's a minority opinion on this. I would say that I'm probably in that same minority along with her. I don't have as much of a problem with rearranging the NOMCOM as I think most NCSG members do. I don't think that they've really. I don't think the suggestions being made by the Board Working Group and the Nominating Committee is really making representation equal amongst the different SOs and ACs. I think the GNSO is getting fewer representatives than, for example, the ALAC. GNSOs would get 4 representatives on the NOMCOM, while ALAC would have 5 because of the structural reasons, I guess, in each of the organizations. But in general, I don't think it's such a bad idea. I would like to see, along with this, and this is something I think I mentioned on the policy committee list, I would like to see alongside with these recommendations, I would like to see fewer appointments by the nominating committee to the ICANN board. Right now, the NOMCOM appoints 8 out of 16 voting board members, and that doesn't sound right to me. I think there should be more elected members than there are appointees by the NOMCOM, but that's about it, and I'd let Aubrey go.
Hey, thanks, Amar. Yes, Aubrey.
Thanks. This is Aubrey speaking. I actually didn't know that I wasn't the only one objecting to it. I thought Amar was more agreement. I'm glad to hear it. I have several objections to it, and to the action. I have one objection to what they've done, and that's they were supposed to make it smaller and they made it bigger. So just on that, I'm looking at it and going, wait a second, you know, it may require a little bit of rethinking. But I think what they've tried to do is bridge that with their normalization so that while some groups may have more than another, I think, if I remember it correctly, that they each have equal choosing value. Now, granted, it's more of a consensus process, as I understand, than a voting process. Nonetheless, they do that. I very much support equal footing. Even though, of course, we're not there, I'm totally against anything that brings more business representatives into it. And the whole notion that the commercial stakeholder group has gotten into is we can't be a stakeholder group. We're far too diverse. We need to be 3 constituencies with 3 representatives. Is, you know, certainly let's break down the whole constituency. But then let's remember that at the stakeholder group, we're 1 out of 4. At the constituency level, we were 1 out of 6 that were, the only non-commercial. So basically going back to the constituency way of looking at the world decreases us. And then never forget that the contracted parties are indeed commercial. But now in looking at NOMCOM, NOMCOM is supposed to be, you know, the neutral replacement for, you know, the voting. Now, you know, like many of us, I'd love to see voting come back, but, you know, that's not going to happen on this path. So the NOMCOM getting a more equal footing basis seems reasonable to me. So the general notion of what they're offering is something I support, you know, whereas I strongly am against anything that gives business more seats on it and the ability to control the choice. Now, some people have argued that GSO is more important than any of the others because most of the decisions the board makes are about GTLDs. And while I have some sympathy for the, you know, there's more work in our area than there is in other areas, I don't see that as a reason to make NOMCOM lopsided. What I see is if we really believe that, then the GNSO, led by the council, but the GNSO should be making a move for an extra seat. I mean, truly believe that is a critical notion that, hey, most of the work you do is about us, so we need a stronger voice. Well, unless we be direct and blatant about it and try to get another voice as opposed to sort of cheating the NOMCOM system. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. As someone who was on the NOMCOM for 1 year, so I guess I have some insight there. Yes, we are definitely in a minority there because the CAG has more representative than the three other stakeholder groups combined. So there is some imbalance. And just a clarification about the vote. It's we do most polling or and then it's kind of secret vote, so we don't know really exactly what kind of dynamics there. We are not sure. So yes, because it's hard to say how it works. The problem for GNSO, we don't work by in we don't have this geographical composition compared to other SO and ACs. And for the GAC, even they have, they can have one representative in the NOMCOM. They didn't send one for many years. So I'm not sure if in giving them three, up to three, they are going to use that, because there was problem before that is not going to be fixed anytime soon if the GAC representative doesn't feel comfortable to vote or decide without consulting with the whole GAC, and there is a problem of confidentiality of about the candidates and so on. So that's my understanding. I guess some equal footing is okay. We are still a minority, but at least to avoid that the commercial side is to have the majority, I think it can be a kind of trade-off we may accept. So, it's more than half, Amar, because the BC, they have two representatives for small business and big business. One for IPC and one for ICP. So they have four representatives, and for the rest, just one. So, okay. Yes, Bill.
Sorry. Who is participating in this? I'm multitasking. Who's directly involved from our world in this process?
No one. No, but because it's a board working group.
It's a board working group. And have we
doing a letter.
Did we write a letter or we did not?
GNSO Council's writing a letter.
Okay.
And there is a comment period for this report, so they extended it, and there is a possibility for us to make a comment if you want. So,
well, if the CFG is as radically overrepresented as you guys are saying right now, and are bitching at the same time, then that might merit some consideration.
Yeah, and that's why they are not happy with the new configuration, because that will reduce the number of representatives for them. So,
I support that.
Okay.
But the idea of five for ALAC is absurd. Sorry.
Well, it doesn't change so much for the ALAC. They have already five representatives, one by Rado. And for example, now, and the chair of the NOMCOM is also from the BC, and the elect chair, which will be probably the next year, the chair of the NOMCOM is also from BC. So there's kind of some imbalance too, even if the chairs are non-voting. But yeah, it shows the kind of dynamics we have in the NOMCOM. And from my experience, I think it's the whole structure need to be need to be changed, and also about the process and many other stuff there. So that's why I think trying to get maybe more input from those who are from NCAG and the NOMCOM can be really helpful, understanding the kind of dynamics that's going there. So, okay. Any further comment here? Okay. Oh, sorry, I was in mute. So I was saying that let's move to the next item, which is about the cross-community working group and enhancing ICANN accountability. It will have its first conf call in a few hours, and we have Robin there as representative for NCSG. So I guess here it's more kind of we can use this item to get update from the GENESO, what's going as discussion there, but also maybe kind of preparing from NCSG side for the work in the, I can't say, the two work stream for the accountability, and see what kind of maybe start to build some strategy there. So hey, someone want to, has any comment here or any update? Because I'm trying to here to combine GENESO Council agenda item in one topic interesting to us in NCSG and to prepare for the accountability discussion. And yes, I see Matthew. Yes, Matthew, please go ahead. Yes, Matt? Matt, are you speaking? I'm not hearing you. Okay, in the time we try to, meantime try that, but you can fix the mic issue. We are talking about the accountability first, so. But by the way, who is from NCAG as participant in the accountability? Okay, accountability working group. Okay, let's just start with Matt, and then we go with Amos. Yes, Matt. Amar, can you speak?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, I was just going to say that there isn't really much to report on this cross-community working group right now. I think I took a look at the participant list, and there's quite a few NCSG people on there. The first call, the group is going to take place later today. And I'm guessing this is on the GNSO Council agenda, specifically because, well, the work stream one of accountability is relevant to the stewardship transition work taking place, and also is just a quick update in the absence of any motions on what's happening with the formation of the group and what's going to happen with the first call. But I don't imagine that much is going to happen, not today, at least not on today's call.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I see Avery in the queue. Yes, Avery?
Okay, so this is Avery speaking. I guess I did end up with something to say. I'm not giving up on it. What I'm trying to say is that the accountability stuff by itself is, while important, is ultimately meaningless. Situation where the board can make any decision it wills at any time. It can change the bylaws fairly easily. So the fact that we're going to work on this is important. The fact that we're going to get things said and visible is important. I think people have it backwards when they think of the accountability. Let me put it a different way. To think of accountability as being necessary for stewardship that only comes into importance if you believe that ICANN should keep perpetual control of the function. If you don't believe that, but you believe there's a contract, then stewardship becomes important for accountability. So it's a very interesting mechanism on it. Accountability is a gating factor for stewardship, basically presupposing ICANN keeps IANA. As we're going for a contract, that contract is the essential thing that NTIA had to be able to have some pressure on accountability at ICANN. So it's really stewardship and solving is a critical factor for accountability. But ICANN and many others are seeing it in the vice versa, and basically it's a problematic perspective. So that's my view on it. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Okay, so still trying to hear it. Matthew, can you speak or you? Yes, you can try to speak again.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, not that loud, but yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, sorry about that. Just 2 points. I think it's very important for us to engage. I understand exactly where Avery's coming from. I think it's very important for us to engage on this in this working group as soon as possible and to kind of set some of our positions quickly out there, because work stream one, which is associated to the stewardship issue, and that is way behind in terms of being aligned with the stewardship proposal that's coming out. There's a lot of work to do to catch up. If the accountability issues that are related to stewardship are going to actually find themselves in the final proposal, so I think we have to engage quickly there. The other thing I would say is I can understand where everybody's coming from. The issue is, though, is that it's far from clear at this point in time in the transition proposal on the stewardship side what the contract situation is going to look like post-transition. There are some who are very comfortable with the contract staying with ICANN. There are some who are comfortable with replicating the existing contract term at 3 years plus two plus two. There are others who are advocating for RFPs. I think the degree to which the contract stays with ICANN on some predetermined basis, whether it's 3 years, 5 years, whatever, and whether it goes up to RFPs afterwards, still is important for us to achieve the accountability changes related to stewardship and in the longer run,
if ICANN's going to have that contract from September 2015. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Thanks, Mike. I guess we will have also some discussion later about the INET stewardship transition too. So, and definitely we have, it's interrelated, interdependent here. I'm not sure what kind of strategy we need to set up what we should do in the working group. It's quite big working group. I guess maybe if we can get some view from Robin, since she will be our representative there, how she see the things will go there and what she think we may need to do. Robin? Okay, so you don't have audio. Okay. Just trying to see if we can have some action here, some to agree on some action, and how we should follow up. So I see that Matthew is suggesting that we start listing items for the two work streams. Maybe, Matt, we can, doing that in some document and share it in the mailing list we have, and also share it as update with the main mailing list, so to get people on board. Okay. So I'm waiting here for your comments, guys. Otherwise, I will move to the next item. So if you want to add something or some suggestion, it will be really helpful. I understand it's quite late for some people, but... Joy, and I see that Robin is trying to input her points in the chat. Mariam, can you please take notes of those points and suggestions made in the Adobe Connect chat and sharing them later so we can follow up with them as action items? Okay, so I think we can move to the next item about stewardship. While you guys, you can keep inputting your suggestion in the chat. So Mariam will take notes. And yes, Matt, we will start We will start with Etherpad or Google Doc and so on. So just we will agree on this action and someone need to take the lead on them. So, okay. Since we are talking about the accountability and we highlighted already about the link with the IANA stewardship transition, there is this item too in the Genesso council call, and there is already a public comment about a proposal from the cross-community working group. So I guess Avri, as our representative there, can give some insight and clarification about the proposal, and also how we should proceed with the public comment, since it's quite we have short time frame to respond to it. Avri, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I'm on. I understand. I'm hard to parse for people doing transcripts. So I was just about to try and call in, even though I refused to, but I got called on. Anyway, see, we finished week one, and we're into week two of a three-week comment period. Milton, I know, has started a comment, which I said that which I guess a lot of people have already contributed to. I said that I would take a look at it and contribute to it yesterday. I lied. I didn't get to it. I'll try to get to it today. Now, this is only partial in the fact that there are still some end items to go. But really, in that fundamental shift split that we talked about earlier between those who insist that there be a separability, true separability, strong separability, and that the contract be a part of the mix that remains, and so that NTA transitions the contract to some other holder of the contract. And in terms of the holder at the moment, I mean, anyone could have been picked. We could have gone to ISOC and asked them to hold it. But instead, there's a lot of reasons why that might not happen. That might not have happened. But instead, basically the idea is to create a legal shell. I originally called it a trust, but the proper definitions of trust don't apply for many localities. So it's a holder of a contract that has an administrator and a bare minimum staff that basically answers completely to a multi-stakeholder community group that forms out of ICANN Plus, and that also has that's the MRT, I believe, the multi-stakeholder review team, and has a, I think it's a customer standing committee, which is slightly broader than just the direct customers, that can raise alarms, that wake up the MRT to do something. And that's the basic mechanism. Now, there are people that say that's far too complex, we're building new things, we're to which a lot of us answer, not really. We just did the ICG, we just did the CWG, we just did the CCWG. We know how to build multi-stakeholder review teams out of ICANN Plus. It's something that we're getting better at all the time, so that's not terribly complex. The details of the custom standing committee might be a little bit more complex in terms of getting the seating right and the quest, is it multi-stakeholder, is it customers plus experts, is it something in between? So there's a little bit of complexity in the explanation and in the thinking still, but once decided, it's not a hard thing to build. We have the RCEP and things like that within ICANN that are basically a group of experts that make decisions. And in this case, it wouldn't be a group of experts that made decisions. It would be a group of experts that watches and raises alarm flags and say, hey, there's something going wrong with, you know, SLAs. There's something going wrong with security and stability. There's something going wrong with policy implementation. That one is somewhat controversial. There's something going wrong with root server function. And basically it raises alarms that then dealt with. So then there's this administrator that basically does the administrative functions and is the holder of the contract. Very similar to what the IETF does with the IAOC, with the Internet Administrative Oversight Committee, and it has a single, it has a single that administers the contracts. Now, their contracts are held by ISOC, so it's slightly different, but essentially the same. So, but then there's the people that say, no, that's too complex. I can just keep it. Accountability will take care of all your issues. You only want the contract because you don't trust ICANN. You know, be that as it may, you know, there's no belief that accountability alone at ICANN can solve the problem because of what we just talked about. So we're in the review. We've got another at least week and a half to get it out. There will be no reply period. Parts of the RFP, talking about the stress tests and talking about other implementation issues that are still just being worked on. We have a meeting either later today or tomorrow on RFP, one that talks about the testing, and then we I've just started to see talk about RFP 5, which I haven't paid any attention to yet and need to, and couldn't even tell you exactly what it's about. So, that's my quick report. I guess it wasn't so quick.
Thanks, Avery. Thanks for this update and explanation, because it's quite confusing about all this kind of new structure suggested in the proposal. And following as an observer the discussion there is still a lot of things to work about the contract call and what kind of legal entity it can be, and also people questioning about if the review team and the customer CSC, those kind of mechanism, they can work correctly or not. So, okay. What do you think what kind of input we may need from those who are not necessarily involved in the discussion to clarify or to help us? I mean, because, for example, you raised the issue of trust model in the working group, but do you think you need some input there that can help you in the working group?
Who are you asking?
Yes, Avery.
Oh, you're asking me. I don't know. The trust issue is a black hole. It's the word we use for a whole lot of issues and components. And, you know, perhaps talking about it will help bring it up, but basically, yes, you could say there's an essential. It's not even a lack of trust, and that's why, because trust has an emotional content. It's more that, you know, the reality of the situation is the board, having the powers it has, can do what it pleases. And even if I 100% trust and love our current board and think they're all the finest human beings in the world who would never screw anybody, I do not trust all future, board members to necessarily do that. So that being the case, and knowing that they can can annul any decision, any time. So, and before the trust, it has nothing to do with the emotional side of trust. But as soon as you say trust, it gets very emotionally laden. And so I tend to prefer to avoid trust and just talk about the realities of they can do that. And that makes it, you know, that makes it unacceptable. So perhaps bringing discussion of trust in would help, but I believe it might just degenerate into, you know, emotional laden speech. Thanks.
Just as an observer, I agree with you and about the level of discussion there and the kind of dynamics with the most active members in the working group there. Okay. So maybe we can hear from other folks involved in the working group, like Matt and Amr, if they have any further comment here or something they want to share with us. Yes, Amr, please go ahead.
Hi, thanks, this is Amr. I haven't been as active as I would like to on this group for the past couple of weeks. I would like to see some sort of mechanism put in place where the experts, such as the ones Avri raised earlier or mentioned earlier, could sort of give input to the contracting entity and for review by the MRT on issues such as implementation of policy and security and stability issues. And the reason why I would advocate these mechanisms to be put in place is to separate that from the function of the customer service committee, which I think should stay limited to service level issues with the direct customers of IANA. I'll try to put something to that effect on the NCSG draft comment and on the NCSG IANA list later. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. I mean,
so after that, the reason my rationale for wanting this is to as much as possible separate policy issues from what the contracting company will be doing, and the mechanism that I think might be a good idea is somehow where input from the relevant SOs or ACs within ICANN can provide this input directly to the MRT and sort of just keep the function of the customer service committee purely technical and not policy related. And I think that's also in line with one of the principles of separating policy from the work of the IANA steward. And I think that is also consistent with the current IANA contract between the NTIA and ICANN. Thanks.
Okay. So thanks, Amr. I was going to say that it will be really helpful if everybody trying to reach those points, kind of that we map them so we can have, for those who are not really involved, to get better understanding what kind of issue we need to care about, and so it will help a lot in terms of drafting the comment. So please try to do so and send to the mailing list. Yes, Matt.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, I think finally.
Sorry about that. So the one issue that I raised earlier on, you probably maybe couldn't hear, but I want to bring it back again, which is the issue of the duration of the contract itself. At the moment on the pad, the suggestion is that the contract remains with ICANN for 2 years after the transition. And then it goes to RFPs, and it might possibly end up with ICANN again or someone else. for a periodic recurring time frame of 5 years. Now, this issue of RFPs and periodic rebidding, if you will, for the contract is something that there is far from agreement or consensus on across different stakeholder groups. So if we believe that having open, transparent, RFP-driven process for a contract that's predetermined in its length and doesn't have extensions, let's say that length is 5 years, then that's something that we need to socialize with other stakeholder groups and influential persons in this process, because I think we're somewhat in the minority on the contract issue. So I just wanted to raise that. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Matt. I think this is about the RFP. This duration is, I think it's quite of. There was several questions because some people are pushing for what they call more predictable and kind of to avoid kind of issues for the contractor. Yes, Avery?
Yeah, and this is one where I've taken a different view than what's on the pad, and I wrote it, but just to quickly state, I tend to support in part the argument about predictability and needing the contract for a sufficient duration. I am supportive of having another 4 years as opposed to 2 years on this one and just taking the issue off the table for the next couple of years. The threat of a contract remains there, but it's 4 years hence, and we have time to get some work done as opposed to being a constant, you know, review period. Because, you know, there's a year on either top side of every review. That's nonsense. I think 5 years is too short a period, and I tend to think that, oh no, someone criticizes me when I say I think that the NTRA pattern of a 7-year contract with a mid-term renewal or extension option is probably the better option. And so that if everything is going smoothly, then, you know, it's another 7 years before there's an RFP. That's sufficient time to actually get some work done, get organized, let a solution play out for a couple years so you see how everything's working, as opposed to constantly having everything in flux all the time. So I actually, it's funny, in the CWG I find myself personally gravitating towards what comes out as a center spot in terms of, you know, giving in on things like contractual predictability while maintaining the certainty of it being separable. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Avery. Maybe I'm trying to jump here, but just I want to kind of clarification. So, we are assuming that first the contract will be got by ICANN. So, why waiting for 4 years? Why not 3 years? I think 3 years looks more balanced. At the end, the IANA function, it looks like a legacy. If I can label it legacy systems, it's just more maintenance. There is no real new development there. I mean, just they know how things are operating and they just keep things working. So it doesn't need, it's a lot of new development or something that can be unpredictable. So I guess maybe 3 years, that can be something more balanced. It's not too short, not too long. And then we can have an RFP for 3 years. But if, for example, in that that case, if another entity, then I can get the contract, maybe we can extend just to allow it more time to mean to more time to be fair, but I don't see why we should give like law. I mean to have that such a frequency for the RFP. I'm just here. I'm kind of jumping. Not sure what I'm saying is correct, but just trying to think out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
I think yes, Avery. And Amar, I'm not sure what kind of research and development are you really expecting in for IANA function. So I mean, at some time we need really to be more more realistic here. It's not that big deal. Okay, anyway, just here I was proposing something, but anyway. Yeah, Samar.
Yeah, hi, thanks, Rafi. This is Samar. Yeah, I think this was one of the things that was raised on the CWG list, just sort of allowing more time for R&D, and that's not necessarily in technical R&D, but maybe also related to improving customer service. Just to sort of give time for the administrator to propose changes to the way things are done and show results without having to worry about competing in RFPs with competing applicants for submitting proposals to take over the function. If I recall correctly, this was raised by Aethnic and based on experience that they have. I found the argument to be reasonable, and so I don't think 4 years is too long a period. And if it does allow for the administrator to improve services in different ways, and perhaps some of them may be technical, I don't think it's that big a deal. Thanks.
So who raises this point, Amar?
I'm sorry, what's the question?
You said someone... Who raises this point?
I think this was... I think this was Aethnic, the folks responsible for .fr, the French...
I am... Okay, Aethnic is... Yeah. As the CTND operator, they do a lot of research development, and they have, department. But really, we are talking here about the IANA function. It's not. I don't think. If there is research and development, I would like to see what they are really thinking to do there. I mean, I would expect maybe VeriSign to do a lot of work because managing the root server A. But for the IANA function themselves, it's hard really for me to see what kind of research and R&D we are talking about. But I stand to be corrected here. So, as I said, I see it is more like legacy system maintenance operated. That's why we are expecting something predictable and so on. So, but anyway, 4 years, 3 years, 5 years. I mean, just. I guess the basic idea is to get frequent RFP and to be sure that we can assess every. Anyway. I see a lot of discussion in the chat, but if you want to make to add further comment or points, please do so. So you can speak. Okay. If there is no further comment, I'd say seeing the Geneso agenda itself, the only, I guess, important item I see there is just about board resolution concerning future GTLD application rounds. So I'm not really aware about this resolution, and if there is any update that you get in Geneso Council, please share with us, because I think this is one of the topic with interest to many among us, and it's something that we may discuss in next year. So okay, so guys, we are mostly done with the agenda for GNSO Council. So if you want to add something about item number 7, or you want to share something, it will be really helpful. Well, okay. Okay. Yes, Avery.
Sorry, I'm misunderstanding your question. You're wondering whether anybody would say something about the board resolution concerning future GTLD applicants. Is that what you were asking about? Item 7 on the GNSO, or the other stuff, or which item 7 are you asking about?
Okay.
Item 7 on yours? Yeah,
the resolution about concerning future GTLD application round, so.
Okay, I mean, I think they're doing the right thing in terms of waiting. I think, you know, we have to make sure that we keep the delay. There are those pushing both, you know, staff, the GD is geared up to continue this level of momentum immediately. And then, of course, there's applicants in the wing that are ready to, you know, start filing applications. I think that, you know, the GNSO has to make sure that we've done the required analysis beforehand, and I think that the issues brought up in that board letter are all really good ones. I was glad to see that they put community first, because I think that is one of our, you know, biggest. They put the application support stuff there in rather weak language, and I think, you know, if any response is envisioned, that one needs a strong. Now I would expect something to come out of at large AI talking about the idea of remedial rounds as one of the considerations in this review, a round at rock bottom price to free as the GAC had asked for, you know, developmental developing economies. But they also restricted it to just the lowest classification. But anyway, I think it's the point of the letter, the point of their document is right. I'm glad that they sort of said, here are a bunch of things we care about, go think about them and come back. And so I think the right stuff is happening on this at the moment. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Just to be sure I understood you correctly, so it's about the review of the first round, and we could expect something for the applicant support? Or maybe I misunderstood what you were saying.
I'm saying is that within the board's letter, following the board's letter, was a list of their issues file open in front of me at the moment. Steve Crocker, actually, I do have it open. And basically, on page 2, and I have Annex 2A, where they go through initial input on areas of policy work. Number 1, community considerations. Number 2, special case considerations. Number 3, rights protections at the second level. Number 4, string similarity. Number 5, registry agreement terms. Number 6, public interest guidance. Only at number 7 do we get applicant support program. 8, 9, collision. 10, IGO, INGO protections. So what they've done is they basically, in their letter, they say, way to go, GNSO reviewing it, and here's a bunch of our concerns. And issues as we see them that we'd also like you to think about. So I'm saying that applicant support is on. Gee, I wonder if they transcribe the blah. If that one they will. If applicant support is being done, what it is on the list. But as I said, I was disappointed with its weak position on the list. And if you read what it says, it's even a weak statement of it. So there's definitely concern and work there, and then I indicated my hopes of what would come out of at least the at-large and AAC about remedial programs, but there's nothing about that in here. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. I think it's more clear. I think that everybody should read this resolution. Give us some guidance what will happen in future. Yes, Joy, I think you have a question.
Yes, thanks, Rafiq. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
My question's just in relation to the discussion on the NCSG list about the statement from ALAC on a proposed freeze on the new GTLD round. And the comments by Avery just reminded me of that discussion and the review of the first round. And I just wondered, is there some way that I thought that the discussion and the points made by different people on the list was quite useful in getting a more nuanced NCSG position on this. And I just wondered if there's some way to pick up that discussion and reflected in any inputs we have around the review of the first round, either at the GNSO meeting, at the next meeting, or in a related work program. So my question is really, how can we pick up that thread and take the ideas and discussion there forward before the next ICANN meeting?
Okay, so just to be sure, you are talking about public interest commitment and VALAC and BCE position.
Yes,
so,
okay, and Amira suggested maybe we pick that up under any other business on this call, which I'm happy to do, if it's not particularly pertinent to do it under this agenda item, that's fine.
Okay, I think since you raised the question here and we are talking about the new GTLD in general, I think that makes sense to we continue discussion here too. So
okay.
It's one kind of position we can take. I think we may separate what we received from BC and then ALAC in two sides. There is the process side. I think we may agree with them that the board should respond to them and to not dismiss. What they send. But about the substantive part, I think we are still in discussion, and we are not all in the same. We are agreeing in the same about the same point, so I guess that's what we may need to discuss later. But yeah, that's what I'm seeing from the discussion I have no position here myself, but I will be happy to see what we can, what others think. Anybody want to add additional comment to or respond to Joy? Yes, Amr, please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Amr. Thanks for bringing this up, Joy. I personally think that we're closer now to getting some form of consensus on this point than we have been when it was first raised a few months ago. If I'm not mistaken, I think that we're all in agreement that the board does need to respond to ALAC. And I do believe that they may have jumped the gun a bit on this, and I think the board does plan on responding. If I'm not mistaken, it's on the agenda for the next new GTLD program committee meeting, which is, I think, supposed to take place later this month. I think we're also generally in agreement that a freeze of new GTLDs is not necessarily warranted, at least not in association with a review of the public interest commitment specifications or the dispute resolution policy procedures for those commitments. What we may not be in complete agreement on is the need for a review of those or not. And sure, I mean, a review of the commitments and the dispute resolution procedures might be warranted, but do we really want to get into that right now? And the reason why I ask this is because we may agree now with ALAC and the business constituency that, okay, we could have a review of those. But the thing is that when we actually get down to the review, I think it's most likely that we won't be in agreement over what should be included in the public interest commitments that the registries would have to sign to in a registry agreement with ICANN. And a lot of the problems here is that a lot of it is related to web content and not so much how GTLDs are managed or. And this is a problem. And for example, one of the commitments is related to protecting trademarks related to content where that domain names lead to. So my question is whether we actually want to get into this right now, and whether we want to recommend that a review of those be done at this point in time or not. And that, I think, is a separate question than actually saying a freeze of new GTLDs is okay until this review is done. For the freeze, I think that we certainly shouldn't advocate that. For the review, well, that depends on what folks here, I guess, think we should, how we should move forward. Thanks.
Kramer, David?
Okay, so I guess I'm I mean, a bit of a minority opinion here, but just to sort of reiterate the argument, I think the process by which we arrived at the public interest commitments was essentially terrible. The result is essentially terrible in that several of the large registries that have applied for many, many trademarks in an attempt at sort of placating the GAC at the time have incorporated a lot of things into their public interest commitments that essentially are in no way in the public interest and have already been rejected as consensus policy. In particular, I think Donuts includes a globally protected mark trademark list in there, which that is explicitly rejected as policy. I don't think, I mean, everything about the picks is essentially terrible, so I don't think we have anything to lose by wanting to change and improve the public interest, that policy. If there's an opportunity to sort of engage in that, I think we probably should. Now, it's true that when it comes to what exactly is included in the public interest commitments, we will have different ideas to the business constituency and so on. And it's also true that we probably think in general, I think people in NCSG think we shouldn't be getting into sort of the content regulation area just because the GAC would sort of like it, and that is what the public interest commitments do. But in terms of, you know, mitigating the disaster that we have now, I think getting into a review process is something we should be involved. We should be happy to be involved in. This doesn't mean I back the ALAC call to block existing applications, and it doesn't mean that I'm that I think the idea of regulating content via domain name is a good one, but just in terms of, you know, what we have now is basically an outcome a lot worse than I think we would get from any actual, consensus policy process. So I'd be happy to reopen it, but I said not without necessarily supporting ALAC's call for blocking applications. Also want to say, I mean, there is a fear in which, while I don't generally want to get into the idea of the ALAC and GAC call to regulate every sensitive string, I do support the idea of using having some TLDs that are for a specific purpose and want to make particular agreements about what is on that TLD. So the idea of the registries having some say is totally wrong. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Is someone muted?
Here. I'm here. I see that Amar is in the queue.
Thanks for speaking to Amar again. So maybe we could come out with some sort of response saying that we do not support the freeze. And I think there's a pretty decent rationale on that, in that a review of the PICs, the public interest commitment specifications, should not in any way interfere with the new GTLDs being delegated, or the signing of, or ICANN even signing new registry agreements with applicants in this previous round. I think public interest concerns were addressed throughout this process using the limited public interest objection mechanisms in the applicant support in the applicant guidebook. And so that's a completely different process. The PICs don't actually come into place until after the registry agreement is signed and the GTLD is delegated to the new operator. So they're two completely different processes. So maybe we can just go ahead and say that in some sort in a response maybe to the BC or ALAC or maybe even in a separate statement of our own. In terms of the review of the public interest commitments in the registry agreement, I agree with David that there are, it's mostly good. It's just that content regulation part that is a bit concerning, and not a bit concerning. It is concerning, and although I wouldn't mind a review, particularly of the dispute resolution process for the public interest commitment specifications in the registry agreement, my only concern with that is that we might end up losing a lot more than we gain in a review, in terms of broadening the scope of content regulation as opposed to improving the dispute resolution process. We might not get what we want, and we might lose more in terms of content regulation than is already present, which is what ALAC and the commercial stakeholder group are pushing for. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. Yes, Avery?
Okay, thanks. Until this discussion, I was pretty ambivalent on all of this. But actually, my position has actually formed more as we've talked in a surprising direction, at least surprising for me. I think that if we care about the picks on these particular ones, then, and we want to make any statement that supports them, then we have to support the freeze. Because once the contracts are written, future decisions on how to handle PICs are irrelevant because they're not contained in the contract, and we have to make sure that the contract at least included them within picket fence. And at the moment, my picket fence categories is not finally enough reminded to know whether this could fall in a picket fence. But if it doesn't fall within the existing picket fence of the contract needs to be frozen until such time as the contract has been revised to include these considerations. So I think that if we're saying, and I've always felt that third-party cases on some of these issues, you know, need to be brought as opposed to just if you're the harmed individual cases. So, and that is one thing that is missing from the PICs is any sort of notion of third-party accountability, that the outside community essentially has no say in it. It's very much a repeat of, you know, the RAA in terms of who's allowed to comment on a PIC violation and who's allowed to initiate a case. That's something that's not handled. So I tend to think that avoiding an issue because we may end up having to make the case on content is dangerous in that it forces us into status quo maintenance behaviors, and should do that. You know, it's important to get the decision and the regular the processes straight to exclude content issues, as opposed to leaving it sort of confused so they're sort of not. So the sort of excluded. So I tend to not want to use that as a reason for saying, you know, no freeze or no open discussions on these because it could end up that way. I think we have to have the discussion. So actually through the conversation, I think I've become convinced that I actually support, you know, saying, yeah, support ALEC. Thanks.
Thanks, Avi. Just to be sure, you are saying that we should support the freeze of those sensitive strings?
I think we should consider it. If we're going to write something, and what I'm saying at the very least is that we're definitely split on the issue. But yeah, I actually think that a freeze while working out the proper contract language is not unreasonable. Thanks.
Okay, so just here, kind of thinking, maybe kind of compromise. If we we support freeze maybe to be there some fairness. It should be temporary, I mean, and it's clear clear to when. I mean, it should not be kind of to be extended over and over. So just to be fair to everybody, maybe you say that can be freeze like for 3 or 6 months, something like that, where we can work on this. Just here is kind of process issue, but have no really preference about the whole this topic. Yes, Hammer.
Thanks, Osama, again. Just in response to Avery, I think your point on third parties being able to raise some sort of complaint or concern within the dispute resolution process is exactly what needs to be reviewed in that process. I agree on that completely. I don't really agree on why a freeze is required to review either the process or the actual specification in the registry contract, because the freeze is, I see it as being more associated with the applicant, with the application, the new detail, the application, and the public interest context within that application process already exists, and it is already addressed, and indeed in some of the cases that are specific to this, they were addressed. I mean, there were objections filed pertinent to this case, and they were reviewed by someone who's appointed to review the objections, and they were ruled against. I mean, the objections, there were rulings against these objections. So I'm not sure why an applicant for a new GTLD needs to necessarily be in a punitive position, be punished because a specification on public interest commitments in the registry agreement needs to be revised by delaying their delegation or the signing of their contract. And so this is where I would disagree with Avery, and I would not recommend the freeze. Thanks.
Okay, I think Avery wants to respond. Yes, Avery?
Thank you. I was mute. I actually raised my hand to an earlier point you were making, Rafiq, in terms of the 2 to 3 or 3 to 6 months. And I think you're quite right that it should be a limited, perhaps freeze is the wrong term for it, you know, like many of the, you know, terms that get played with meaning freeze means frozen and never changing and you know, fear. And we actually call it punishment, which in no way is it a punishment. But in any case, I think a temporary one, but it should be, and perhaps time limited, although it could be related to just a review of the contract and to make sure that the contract leaves open. The thing I'm concerned about is if we do it after the contracts are signed, anything that is done in those discussions, including how the dispute resolution process works and who has standing in the dispute resolution process, could be nullified by what's in the contracts that they've signed. So you have to make sure that the contracts are sufficiently open to at least allow for PIC policy. You know, and the PIC policy is within picket fence, and anything we make on PIC policy is by proper GSO consensus policy is to be included, it does revise the contract. So that's what needs to be done. I don't think all of the many issues of what should be the PIC policy need to be resolved, but we need to make sure that the contract allows that. And so I would probably argue that should go into all the contracts for everybody that filled out a PIC, not just the sensitive ones. So I would probably go beyond, if pressed on the subject, that people file pics, the pics should be real, and there should be the possible development of pic policy that would be consensus policy changing the behavior of registrars. Hopefully I made it explicit. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Avery. I guess to move forward, Amar volunteered to draft a response first to the BC, so just to kind of to express what we think, and we support the position or not. For also, if I understand correctly, we are talking more maybe if we try to review the PIG and also the dispute process. On the other hand, I see about the there is some disagreement about the freeze. I'm tempted to say we may have this kind of compromise. I mean, just limited freeze. So it allow us to try to, I mean, give that time window to review or to do change, but it's not held for a long time, infinite time. So that's I see it as a it can be a compromise. So, and I understand about the issue about the contract here. So. If it's signed, it will be hard to change it later. So I'm just suggesting here if we can move, the discussion to the policy committee and to first to draft a response and then to agree on the next steps as we discuss it here. For other point that we don't have agreement, we may find some balanced compromise. And I see that the discussion is still going on in the chat, as usual. Anyway, any comment here or further input or suggestion, so how to move forward or what we should do next? Okay, I think we are almost done with the general agenda, unless someone wants to add something there. Mariam, can you move back to the NCAG agenda? Moving to item number 3, which is more about getting update from working group or any ongoing policy, and also about open comment period that we need to respond. We already covered the animal stewardship transition working group and also the cross-community working group on accountability. As a comment, we have, as we highlighted before, the cross-community working group naming related function draft transition proposal. So this is quite urgent one to respond. And we already have a draft where people can add their comments. Other than that, for those involved in the working group, if they want to give us some updates or they want to raise some issue that they want to share with others, and if they want some input and so on, so they are welcome to do so. So I didn't try to list working groups here, but for example, the GNSO review working party or the proxy and privacy accreditation working group and so on. So if someone has any comment or if they he want to share something, so please do so. Yes, Kathy. I guess maybe Stephanie can give some updates since the it's the expert working group in the new directory service. So, I think you are talking about the group between the board and the GNSO. And yes, I think Avri is there. Yes, Avri, and then Stephanie.
Okay. Well, actually, Stephanie's before me.
Okay. Well, okay. Stephanie?
Hi. I wanted to just give a little update on the Privacy Proxy Accreditation Working Group. But you were asking Avri about the other one, so why don't I wait until after that? Avery's our rep on the expert working group.
Yeah, okay. Okay, it's me again. This group is moving along. This group is moving slowly. Basically, we're meeting monthly, and at the moment, I think we're putting together some smaller subgroups, but we haven't actually decided on that. I think that comes at our next meeting. We have monthly meetings, and I think one is actually coming up rather soon. But I haven't. Might even be this week. I have to check my calendar. I've got it in there. But so basically, though, the way this one is trending is that the work is really being sliced and diced into any number of different issues. There'll be some parallel efforts going on. These will be efforts that are GNSO work. Whether it's, we haven't gotten to the point of separate PDPs or one PDP with many groups, but definitely a slicing of the work into various tracks. That's about where we're at. And as I say, monthly meetings, and it's moving very slowly and deliberately.
Okay, Stephanie?
Yeah, very briefly, the Privacy Proxy Working Group is getting ready to send out a document that summarizes our draft advice to date on the matters that we were tasked with, and there's some things we're still fighting about. And I predict that it will be ever thus. So we kind of have to watch every meeting and make sure we're not totally outnumbered by the intellectual property guys. And the bones of contention tend to be around still no agreement on whether business and folks who do business on the Internet should be considered commercial and therefore not eligible to use privacy proxy services. That has come up on the thread, even though we've thought about it many times in the meeting. And it's still there on the thread, which is why all of us have to get on the call today. And the whole issue of when you reveal and what the threshold is. We had a lengthy fight at the last meeting, discussion on what the obligations of the privacy proxy service provider were for non-response from the registrant. And, you know, feverish debate about whether it should be in a hard bounce, a soft bounce, whatever. The fact is that this interrelates very closely with the recommendations that are in the EWG report, because the EWG report would make it mandatory to have several contact points. So a mere bounce alone would not be relevant. And quite frankly, the speed that the Privacy Proxy Working Group is moving at, it is entirely possible that a subgroup of the EWG compendium of groups might happen to get the advice out while we're still fighting over it in the PPSAI. The reverse could be true as well. So I had promised Kathy that I would draft a summary of what the Appendix H, I believe it is, that is attached to the EWG report is. That's the part where we talk about reveal in privacy proxy services, because that was drafted by somebody else, certainly not me. I don't claim ownership for it. So lots of work to do, and I apologize. I meant to get that out by today's meeting, but I've got the worst case of writer's block. I can't write a grocery list. If anybody isn't cured, please send them my way. So that's about it. Lots of work still to do, and shortly this thing will be public.
Thanks, Stephanie. Thanks for the update. And we are waiting for your summary, like many other other updates too. Okay. I see that Amar, you are suggesting that Chris is with us. Maybe he can give update about the transliteration working group. Chris?
Oh, yeah, this is Amar. I was just going to say, yeah, Chris and Rudy are two co-chairs of that PDP working group, and they're both on the call, so they'd probably do a better job than I would. Thanks.
Yeah, and that's why I thought you were suggesting Chris. I think it will be first time for him to speak about this in the call. So, Chris, can you hear us? Okay. Okay, Chris. So we can come back to you later. I think Rudy, he said that he's leaving the for another meeting. So okay. So any other update from working groups or that you want to share here?
Hi, Rafiq, this is Amar. I guess since Chris is having some technical trouble, I'll just point out what he said in the chat, that the initial report of the translation and transliteration PDP working group is going to be out very soon and for public comment. So just to remind everyone, this was a PDP charted to answer two main questions. One's whether translation and transliteration of contact information in the WHOIS database is desirable or not, and a second one of if it was found to be desirable, who should bear the burden or the cost of doing this. And so, yeah, we've had quite a, well, we've had a roller coaster ride a bit on this PDP, and it's one of the PDP working groups that's heavily populated with NCSG members, which is nice. There are recommendations that are going to be put out in this initial report, and I think the NCSG viewpoint on this has been that the translation and transliteration of contact information should not be mandatory for a number of reasons that we pointed out early in the process of this PDP when we gave in our stakeholder group comments. And I would say that we have more or less agreement on this position from the registrars and from some other members of the community, including the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. Jim Galvin and on this PDP work group as well supported this position. There's also an expert working group that is working in parallel with us on the internationalized domain name registration data services. So we'll be looking forward to seeing what they come up with. I guess the main proponents of mandatory transformation or translation, transliteration of contact information are probably the IPC and the at-large advisory committee, although ALAC are not participating in this PDP working group, but they did submit comments early in the process. So that's about it, and I'll be happy to answer questions if there are any.
Okay, so thanks, Sam. And thanks for the update from Chris. So when the report is out, I hope that we NCAG will make the comment. And since we have several people involved there, so Chris and Alan, please follow up and share with us the report in time. So we hopefully we try to comment in time. Okay. So, any other updates you want to share here? Okay, so we have just 50 minutes left in this call, so I guess it's time to go to any other business and to give some update about the meeting in Washington, D.C. For the non-contracted party between the non-commercial stakeholder group and the commercial stakeholder group. So it's small meeting between the officers of the two counterparts of the non-contracted party. So as you say, the preparation is moving. And it will be held on the 12th of January. We are still working to tweak the agenda and to agree on some topics between the two parties that we may find some common ground here. The basic idea is really to improve the relation between the two parties and to make the non-contracted side of GNSO more functional, and to see how we can improve that. So maybe I'm not sure if Bill is still here. He's also participating in the discussion. If you want to add something about that, and because also he asked if we can discuss this in the any other business. Yes, Bill.
Thanks. Well, there are several different dimensions to this, I suppose. This is a follow-up to the meeting that was held a couple of years ago. And in that time, obviously, relationships have not always been terribly effective between CSG and NCSG, so there clearly is room to discuss in-house matters, and that was sort of the original starting point for this, but it has evolved over time to try to broaden a bit and do some other things as well. I just wanted to put two particular points on the agenda that I think we have to decide about. One is there's three. One is the content of the sessions, which Rafik has raised that on the NCSGPC list. We've had discussion back and forth. And I had suggested that we try to concentrate on the areas of agreement and then have maybe a split one where we, if there's one party that's more interested in one thing, one party that's more interested in another, we both get a smaller chunk of time to do that. Rob Hogarth added this notion of having chairs. I suggested co-chairs for the session. So just organizing the substantive agenda is one thing. Second question is whether groups are going to do stick around for the Wednesday and do some outreach meetings. Rafik seemed to think that NPOC was planning on something, and I've asked several times but have not received a reply about that. But I think that the desire is to use the Wednesday morning if we can get people to stick around. And budget has been provided. So if people are willing to stay Wednesday morning for a constituency-based outreach kind of event, if NPOC wants to do its thing, NCC does this thing, that's perfectly fine. And we could, they will cover the extra night of hotel. So that's been agreed, and that should be on your horizon. When the time comes to deal with the travel arrangements, assuming constituency travel finally does get back to us. There was a meeting organized a year ago between FADI and Washington, D.C. public interest groups and actors. And this was around the time of the State of the Net meeting. And I was trying to organize coming to that. It fell through for all kinds of reasons. But the people from the D.C. office wanted me to come and do a outreach thing. But they did it anyway. And they had the people from, you know, Public Knowledge and I think CDT, Open Technology Institute, et cetera, et cetera. And so they've got a scanning list of folks they could do outreach with. And we could draw in others as well, maybe Mark's people, whatever. So that's one thing. If we want to do that, that would be Wednesday morning. The other point was I suggested on the list that I'd be curious about hearing about others' views on this. As you know, NCUC has organized conferences three times, day-long conferences on the eve of meetings. And based on the success of that, I sent all this. I don't know if everybody's reading the list. Based on the success of those meetings, staff set aside in the budget process for this year $33,000 that could be made available to organize policy conferences if anybody wanted to do it. They wanted to spread the love, not just at NCUC organizing things, but nobody has asked for the money. So what I suggested was maybe we could do NCSG and CSG could do something together, non-contracted meeting on the Friday before Buenos Aires, because the money would have to be spent during this budgetary cycle or else it will be lost. And probably staff would not try this again, to do something on sort of ICANN beyond the DNS industry. In other words, there's been an increasing tendency on the part of some actors, particularly senior staff and so on, to talk about ICANN as a DNS industry association almost, when, of course, it's supposed to be representing a broader set of interests. And the question is, obviously, while we have lots of areas of disagreement with CSG, we both are in the position of not being contracted parties and would have some respective issues we'd like to raise. And so we could do a day-long thing where either we cooperate actively with them in planning each session or they get half the time and plan it how they want, and we get half the time and we plan it how we want. And it appears that this is possible because Rob has put it, a discussion of it onto the agenda. So, long story short, it would be interesting to hear back from people whether they would be open to the idea of organizing a policy conference, half of a policy conference, on the Friday in Buenos Aires to discuss our issues.
Okay, thanks, Bill. Just maybe a suggestion. Why we cannot do this event, not really as the pre-event, but just in the Friday after the ICANN meeting, so we can ensure more participation, I guess. Mm-hmm. Just thinking here. Not everybody will arrive on Friday, so if we want to ensure attendance. I support such event, but just suggesting maybe to not think it just should be a pre-event. But yes, Bill, you were speaking.
I'm sorry, I muted my sound inadvertently. Aubrey's saying she likes the idea of the post-Friday. Nobody will stay. This is the problem that we've had over and over with this thing. I mean, I would stay. But a lot of others seem to say they wouldn't. Well, okay, you say that. When we've raised this before, they've said no, people don't stay. So,
I mean, I think, Ben, it's always if we inform people beforehand. I mean, if we already know from Singapore meeting that we will have such event in Buenos Aires and we publicize about it, people will make the arrangement. But just like a few weeks before the meeting, it's quite hard for many to change their plan. Most of them, in particular, not in our community, they prepare their travel from the end of the ICANN meeting. So,
well, okay, we have always done these on Fridays before when people were fresh and engaged. CSG people didn't seem to think after when I talked about this before with them was a great idea, and I've heard the same kind of thing from other people before. The question of whether, you know, I don't want to get hung up on which Friday. The question is, would we be interested in doing some sort of an event? Do we have things to say to the community?
Yeah, I think, I don't see any objection here, so yeah.
Okay. So then when we have the call, we will operate on the assumption that we are interested and we'll proceed. I wanted to have your support before pushing it further. Thank you. Stephanie, we can talk about whatever we want. We can talk about privacy. We can talk about human rights. We can talk about trademark abuses. We can talk about any issues. In other words, if we have a day-long conference, talk about the concerns of non...
Bill? Bill? I think we lost Bill. Okay, in the meantime, yes, Stephanie?
Okay, now do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it happened to Matthew too, so the screen flashed and Adobe disappeared and now it's back. All right, so we'll carry forward. I'm sure we can fill the space. And if people are interested in doing it, I think we haven't done one since March of 2014, so it'll have been a year and a half, and I think it does provide us an opportunity to position ourselves with the rest of the community and to get our views on the table in a way that often they don't otherwise.
Okay, Bill. Anyway, I think we have 6 months to prepare and to agree with the CIG, so it will be kind of a different experience from what we are doing, trying for next month. Okay, I think we just know we have support for this to move forward and see how it goes on, and then we will work on that. Okay. I think we reached 2 hours of this meeting, and we are in any other business. If someone wants to add something or he wants to share something, it's a good time to do so. Otherwise, I will adjourn the call in a few minutes.
Let's drag on and on.
It's midnight here, Bill, so I'm trying to to be fair to myself and those in the Asia Pacific who want to sleep early. Okay. Yes, Joe, New Zealand is really ahead of everybody, so okay. I guess we got some several items to follow up. I hope that we can do so in the list. And we will have probably a busy 2015, since this is the last call of NCAG in 2014. thanks, everybody, for attending. And thanks for Joy to join us. It's really, really late hours. That's dedication. Okay, so, guys, so thanks, everyone, and see you soon.